Ronaldinho to Messi. Will he get that first goal for Barcelona? Remember the name, Lionel Messi. At the age of 17, scores his first goal for Barcelona. Back to Mbappe! What a great day it's been for him!
Oh, spectacular, Thiago!
Haaland, look, very accomplished player himself, and Haaland
in behind goes for goal! Oh, what a start to his Dortmund career! One chance, one goal!
Hello and welcome to Pure Fit Boys Euro 2020 preview. I'm your host, Alistair Madden, and as ever, this podcast will be in-depth, unbiased, and Scottish. In this series, we will look to understand each of the nations at the tournament and break down playing style, key players, and expectations. On the show today, we will be reviewing Wales, and to do so, I'm really delighted to say that I'm joined by the excellent Hugh Davis. Now, when I asked Hugh to give me a summary of how I should perhaps describe or introduce him, he said, just introduce me as that guy who writes for 442, but I think he's really quite undersold himself there. Hugh was previously the managing editor of 442, perhaps one of the greatest, if not the greatest football magazine ever. But yeah, Hugh, it's fantastic to have you on. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. And that's a very kind introduction. Cheers.
I was aware that maybe perhaps I would I'd be bigging you up too much, but I don't think it's possible to big up someone who used to work as a managing editor of 442, a fantastic institution and one that I grew up reading. So yeah, memories of going to Centre Parks and my mum buying the latest copy of the magazine for the car journey down to Cumbria. So yeah, fantastic to have you on, Hugh. I'm just going to ask you to cast your mind back now and think of the qualification route. What was the expectation for Wales going into the qualifiers?
A bit mixed, really, because obviously after Euro 2016, there was huge hope, and then we didn't qualify for the World Cup in Russia, which we really should have done. We made a bit of a mess of the qualifiers. So then when it came around to the Euros, it's thinking, well, we really should get through here. You know, half of Europe qualifies, essentially, and, you know, we should be able to get into this tournament with some ease. And then you land a group where it's quite open, you know, Slovakia, Hungary and Croatia all going for it, and no obvious minnows either. So yeah, I think we all thought we should qualify, but we didn't entirely trust ourselves to do it, and we made life a little difficult for ourselves, as we had in 2018, or rather for the 2018 tournament qualifiers, and you know, lost two of our first three and had to fight back from it. But it's we got there in the end, and now hoping to push on from it.
Yeah, and you speak about sort of not being fully convincing during the qualifiers. How would you describe more generally the performances? Were there reason for pessimism or reason for optimism or reason for just being slightly cautious going into the tournament?
It's a campaign of two halves, as the cliche doesn't go. We started with what Giggs was liking at the time, Ryan Giggs, our manager then, which was kind of 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 with a really kind of fluid front line, which was a great principle in theory, everyone interchanging and defenders not knowing where to go. And then it had come to getting the ball in the box and there'd just be no one there at the end of it. So we kind of struggled with that setup for a little bit and, yeah, lost to Croatia, which, you know, that's the hardest fixture. But then we lost in Hungary a few days later as well. And that was really damaging. We were in trouble then. So bit of a break then, come back in September, squeeze past Azerbaijan, thanks largely to their own goalkeeper. We didn't play that one particularly well. Mm-hmm. And then what we did was we brought in a 28 or 27-year-old, as he would have been then, Kiefer Moore, who during Euro 2016 had been playing non-league football and kind of appeared suddenly from nowhere with quite close Welsh ancestry, actually. He's kind of Welsh connected, but he's not somebody who'd been on our radar before. And we tried the 6'5" giant of a man up front. And suddenly we had a focal point who could not only kind of keep the ball, but also show really good movement to get other players into those great positions and score a few goals as well. And he kind of completely transformed Wales' qualification campaign. I know that sounds really melodramatic, but I would have said until about 6 months ago that he was our most important player. Like, without him, we looked a little bit lost, and he was just so important. But then, since the qualification campaign, and I think we'll probably come on to that in a bit, he's not played as much. Not played the last four competitive games. We've gone back to a kind of false nine system. We'll come back to that later. But yeah, for the qualification itself, did 43-1, scraped through a lot of games. I think we basically had to win the last game, and we did 2-0, and that was having had to win the previous game, which we won 2-0, you know, in Azerbaijan, and everything was a lot of kind of single goals each way or draws. It's very tight margins. But we got there, and we've built a little bit more momentum now, even if everything's still a bit tight.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose maybe those performances, as you say, scraping through, have maybe just helped the expectations not to be too grand going into the Euros. But how do you expect Wales to perform this summer? Obviously, that group with Switzerland, Turkey and Italy is quite tough, but how do you expect Wales to perform?
Oh, how do I expect us to perform? You'd kind of hope for quarters and beyond, be disappointed with group stage and expect second round. I mean, I think Wales are capable of getting to the quarterfinals. And obviously, we've shown that we're capable of more than that before. And I would actually say this squad is stronger than the previous one. Sorry about those background noises. I'm trying to work out how to stop it happening.
Don't worry, Hugh. There's been plenty of background noises throughout this series, so it adds to the authenticity, shall we say, of the episodes.
That's fine. Who's messaging me about work on Slack at 9 o'clock anyway? But it's 4:42 actually. Anyway, so yes, this tournament. My real thinking is about going into the tournament is slightly different to the kind of common consensus that you should just try to avoid losing your first game. I interviewed David Brooks a couple of months ago, and he said, you know, every group game is really important, but you don't want to lose that first game because then you're playing catch up. And although I think that would often be the case, I disagree with this tournament because we've got to win a game in the groups. I know Portugal got through their Euro 2016 group with three draws and ended up doing all right out of it. But realistically, you've got to win one game. And if you just get that early draw with Switzerland in our first match, great. But now you need to beat Turkey. And if you don't win that, then you've got to must-win game against Italy in Italy. So I kind of think a lot of it's going to come down to how quickly we settle in that first match. If we beat Switzerland, I think we could have a situation a bit like 2016 where we were able to relax quickly. If we don't, we could have a situation like we did 2 minutes into 2016 when we almost went 1-0 down to Slovakia after about a minute and a half, and that could have almost written off our tournament before it begun. It might have panicked. As it is, we're good at getting into games late. We've scored four late winners in our last eight competitive internationals, I think. Lots of different players getting late goals. There's a ridiculous statistic about, I think it's now like six players in the last 3 years have scored their first ever goal for Wales in a competitive game that in what happened to be the winning goal in a 1-0 win. And it's different players every time someone's chipping in. So it's great. It's fantastic that there's that fighting spirit and always goes to the end. I'm not sure how sustainable it is. That's my concern. If I had to kind of put an objective head on it, I'd say that the side's a little bit lacking in goals. And you can see a lot of binary scorelines. That's how it's been for Wales for the last couple of years, especially under Giggs. Page has actually tightened up the defence quite a bit as well, which is a good thing, but doesn't necessarily mean it'll be balls to the wall, four all draws. So I'd say it's going to be tight. I think Wales can get out of the group, and I think they can then get to the quarterfinals, provided that they kind of keep their heads in the last 16. But if it starts badly, it could get very difficult, and we'll just have to see how it works with that.
What you're saying to me there, Hugh, about late goals suggests to me that there could be some fantastic scenes in the fan zones of Cardiff, if, of course, those fan zones are allowed to go ahead with some late winners. I was actually in Bordeaux for the late Ireland winner against Italy when they managed to make it to the knockouts at Euro 2016. And yeah, to say that there was probably a few sore heads the next morning for some of those Irish fans would be an understatement. So yeah, perhaps we're all set for some late winners and some dramatic scenes in the fan zones across Wales this summer. Just focusing now on the manager at Wales, there's obviously quite a bit going on behind the scenes, and we don't want to get into that too much, but how would you describe the playing style that the manager looks to implement with this Welsh national team, Hugh?
Well, it's kind of best to call it the manager anyway, because there's a little bit of, not doubt, no one's quite sure exactly how much this is Rob Page's team and how much is Rob Page taking advice from Giggs. He said he's always in contact with him. Giggs currently not taking charge for the summer due to a court case. He's not actually been dismissed by the Welsh FA, so you could come to a scenario where he's back afterwards. But for the moment, it's Rob Page in charge, and he's kind of continued with what Giggs was doing in the way you would expect, because he was in temporary charge in November for three games and then in the March internationals as well. But Wales have, perhaps unexpectedly, kind of reverted to this back three that we hadn't really played until since Chris Coleman left. It's been 4-2-3-1, as I mentioned before, all the way, and he'd like this fluid front line, and then Kiefer Moore came in, and then they just experimented trying, let's try some wing-backs to get Gareth Bale involved a bit more. On the right of a 4-2-3-1, he's a bit kind of, he's having to do a lot deep. He's not really able to get into the goal-scoring positions you might want him to, which, while he's kind of an excellent creator now, you want him really impacting that final third. So they tried something different, tried a bit of a 3-4-3, put him on the right of that, worked pretty well. I was like, okay, that's a good plan B to have. And then we did it again, and then again in March, and suddenly that looks like it might be plan A, and suddenly Kiefer Moore is an excellent plan B. What we've done in the last few games is have Harry Wilson as a false nine, who's as un-Kiefer-like as you could get, really, but his movement's excellent. I don't know if you remember the goal that Wales scored against Belgium in March. We went on to lose that game 3-1, but we took the lead with an absolutely wonderful team goal, interplay between Connor Roberts, Bale, and then Wilson finishing it. And that's exactly the kind of thing that Page wants to see. He wants to see this, and Giggs wants to see before him, this kind of interplay in the front line. It does sometimes not work. The first half of the Czech Republic game, we played as if Moore was playing when he wasn't. And so we're hitting a lot of hopeful balls up to Harry Wilson or even a 5'7" Dan James, and it wasn't working. We brought on Kiefer Moore. And then, ironically, it's 5'7" Dan James who heads in the winner from a Bale cross. So there's a lot of different ways of harming teams, I suppose. But ultimately, it looks probable to be this 3-4-3 with maybe a false nine, either Wilson or Brooks playing as that false nine. But they've got the option to kind of put Kiefer Moore as that target man if necessary. And the good news about the 3-4-3 system for Wales is that the wing-backs are in such good form. In 2016, Chris Gunter and also Neil Taylor both played really well. And Gunter kind of assisted Sam Vokes' goal against Belgium in the quarterfinals. And Neil Taylor scored what is literally the only goal he has scored since, I think, 2009 for Wrexham against Grays Athletic. He genuinely hasn't scored another goal since before. So he scored. But in general, their kind of attacking output was a little bit limited because they're defensive fullbacks. Now, Wales are looking at probably playing Nico Williams on the left, even though he's naturally right-sided, and Connor Roberts on the right, who's just had the season of his life at Swansea, been the best right-back in the Championship. Now, those are two really good attacking prospects, and then Reece Norrington-Davies has done well on the left as well, and there's options there now. So it's interesting. There's a lot of different ways of playing, but I think it's probably going to be their back three, and if not, then it will be 4-2-3-1 because, and I promise I'll wrap this up soon before the tournament starts, but the other thing about the 3-4-3 is where Ramsey fits in. Aaron Ramsey's played three, I think, of our last 21 games in 21 games of any kind. And he was in that 4-2-3-1. If you're having only a two-man midfield, can he play in that role instead of Joao Laurampadou? Does he not play? Does he go in the front three? It's a nice problem to have, but I don't know how we tackle it going into the tournament this summer. Sorry, Hugo, I've been talking for about half an hour.
I was just sitting here appreciating everything you were saying, Hugh. It really was interesting to hear such insight into the Welsh national team. I think in Scotland, I was speaking to Ali Maxwell the other night, and in Scotland we don't pay so much attention, certainly during qualifiers, to what the English national team or the Welsh national team are doing. So it really is quite fascinating to hear how they play tactically, how they set up. And the likes of Aaron Ramsey, who probably, if you've not been paying attention to how Wales or indeed how Juventus have been playing over the last year, you think Aaron Ramsey must be one of the first names on the team sheet. But to hear that stat in terms of just three out of the last 21 games he started in. Really, it makes it quite interesting.
It's two starts and one sub appearance in that time, and it just it's injury based rather than dropped. But that kind of makes you wonder how he's going to slot back in as well.
Whether or not Ramsey does have a role to play this summer remains to be seen. But for you to flag that is really quite interesting, Hugh. Just now focusing on the players, we've focused a little bit on the manager's style and who is ultimately responsible for that style. But in terms of the players, who would you say is the one player who really makes this Welsh national team tick?
It's a question that I wish had a simple answer and doesn't. I was doing the, when I was doing one of the previews, the key player in 2016 was Gareth Bale, and he was the obvious pick for this year. But I felt the Wales have kind of developed a way to play well without Bale and Ramsey, which we haven't previously been able to do. I'd say Bale's still massive. He's barely missed a game, whereas Ramsey's had a lot of injuries. But Wales can now succeed without Bale, even if it's trickier. So then I thought, well, Kiefer Moore's just been huge, literally huge. Uh-huh. Like he's changed Wales' fortunes. But now Wales have shown that actually they're quite capable of winning without him. Aaron Ramsey, massive player, barely played of late. Joe Allen, key, injured. And I think really you're looking at someone who's so young, but I think our key player in many ways is Ethan Ampadu. He's 20 and has 20 odd caps. I think it's 22 caps, which is mad in itself. And what he offers us is not just kind of a calm head in possession. He's not always quite as calm out of possession. As you see when he tried to decapitate a player once when he basically got pissed off that he'd been fouled. But he's sometimes wanting for a little silly booking, which actually cost us in 2016. But in possession, he's very calm on the ball. He's got a fantastic passing range, which means he can switch the play really easily, go back to front really easily, or just keep the ball. And he has got a good reading of the game off the ball, so he does know where to go. It's just a question of getting there on time, essentially. He's also, his versatility is really key. It often sounds like a backhanded compliment, that you're kind of going, oh, that's great, he can play averagely everywhere. But he's a really good centre-back and a really good deep-lying midfielder. And Wales sometimes change systems mid-game. It's not that uncommon. Like I mentioned it with the Czech Republic game. Wales will change how they play in the middle of a game sometimes. Having him as the option in a back four or a back five, or in front of a back four or a back five, and on either side, kind of gives Wales the opportunity to do that, knowing that he'll be fairly reliable there. He hasn't had a great season with Sheffield United, and I know some of the fans have been a bit disappointed with that, and in a way that was justified at the start of the season because he was struggling. But he was played in I think four different positions at the start of the season. They tried him at central midfield, the kind of the central defender, the left side of centre back now, the right side of centre back earlier, and they've got such a unique system that I don't think it's easy for many players, however versatile they are, to be a centre back who pops up on the right wing. And that's, he just looked a little bit lost there, and that's understandable. But he grew into it a little bit. He kind of knuckled down, and ended up with things going a little bit better for him. So yeah, there's a lot of hopes for him. He'll be really important. And at the top end, Gareth Bale will be key, but there's also David Brooks scores key goals. Harry Wilson has been superb. Dan James, of course, who I didn't even mention before that. And that's without mentioning, you know, Kiefer Moore and the other options around there too. So there's a lot of key players.
Absolutely, Hugh. And it seems like, as was the case in Euro 2016, it will be more a case of like the team as a whole performing and every player popping up with important contributions in one way or another. If Wales are to do well, it's a tough group for sure, but with the talent at their disposal, you wouldn't be too comfortable betting against Wales, at least making out the group stages and having a solid knockouts as well. We've focused there on some of the players. We've focused really quite closely on Ethan Ampadu and the role that he'll have. Do you envisage any young players in this Wales team having a breakthrough tournament this summer, Hugh?
I suppose it depends on who's watching them break through, because for Wales fans, there'll be a lot of players that we've seen a lot of, and kind of fans of maybe Football League clubs or might have seen a lot of. But it's certainly going to be a young squad. I mean, it was quite a young squad in 2016, but then there were a lot of early retirements. And there's actually only five or six players from that squad only 5 years ago that will be in this one. And I don't just mean the starting 11, I mean all of them. So there's been a lot of flux. But if you look at the team now, it's a very young squad. I mean, as I said, Ampadu is 20. I'm just going to look at a couple of the ages. Nico Williams is 20, just turned 20, in fact. Matt Smith has 13 caps, 21. He'll be there. Brennan Johnson might make the squad at 19. But I think, I mean, Dan James and Harry Wilson. Harry Wilson's almost the old man of the squad. He was the third oldest player in one of our games recently, and he's 24, just turned 24, I think. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Dan James 23, and Brooks is young too. I think he's also 23, and that's without getting to Rabbi Matondo, Tyler Roberts. It's a young squad, and I think if I had to pick someone to break through, the people won't have seen as much, because I think, you know, Premier League fans will have seen, well, not they won't have seen the best of Ampadu, but they will have seen him, and they know what Harry Wilson's about, and they know what Dan James is about. I think that. I was trying to choose between two here.
Oh, you go. Take your time. My five guys order isn't due for another 15 minutes. We've got plenty of time.
I think if Nico Williams starts on the left, it could be fascinating to see him really take this opportunity. He's had an in-and-out season at Liverpool. He's had some great performances, and he's also been lambasted by fans for some poor performances. He has kind of made himself key to the point that we've dropped two other left-backs to give him a go, and he's already seriously impressed. And so if he can't get him on the right because of Conor Roberts' form, then he'll be on the left. So he'll be one to look out for. And I think also people might just have been sleeping on David Brooks a bit because of that year-long injury he had. Mm-hmm. He's had a good season for the most part with Bournemouth. He struggled a bit after in the start of this year after an injury, but he's another player who I think could surprise people. And I think it's those attacking players. I mean, I think a lot of people will be saying, well, hang on, what about Joe Roden and Chris Meppham? You were talking about young players. Your centre-backs are 23, but that could be an issue, if anything. I actually really like those players, but I don't think many teams would want to go into a tournament with two 23-year-old centre-backs, and it might end up, you know, the lack of experience could be a bit tricky.
I think what strikes me is just how under the radar this Wales team have perhaps flown. I think Ethan Ampadu is perhaps this Wales team in microcosm. Ampadu, of course, was subject to criticism of sorts at the start of the season anyway, but I think he was performing in a very difficult Sheffield United team. So I, for one, I'm really excited to see how he fares and this Wales team generally fares at the Euros this summer. Now, Hugh, I'm going to ask one last question of you, and I say to all my guests, our listeners will be familiar with this spiel now, but I say to all my guests, you can answer this last question with your head or with your heart, but how far do you think Wales will go this summer?
I will say, optimistically, quarterfinals, most likely last 16.
I think most Wales fans would probably be happy with that. Hugh, it's been fantastic speaking to you. I've really enjoyed hearing all about the Wales national team. Be really authentic as well. We've had your 442 group chat. We've had the two of us sneezing. We've had me thinking longfully about my impending Five Guys order. But Hugh, it's been fantastic speaking to you. Hugh, thank you so much.
No, it's a pleasure to be on. Thanks very much.
Yeah, fantastic. And thank you to you, the listener. Hopefully you're staying safe. Hopefully you're staying well and looking forward to a feast of football this summer at Euro 2020. Until next time. Goodbye.